To my immediate left is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. He is on our air every Friday morning, 9:50 in the morning, and then at 2:06 in the afternoon.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks for inviting us here tonight. Thanks, everybody, for the kind invitation, and to Moore and Warner for their invitation. Please ask a lot of questions tonight, because Dave asked really hard questions. I don't like answering them, so please ask a lot of questions. It's a good group number to ask a lot of questions. Bigger picture, from what we've seen in the last few months, going all the way back to the end of last year's crop year, if you talk to somebody about the markets, a market analyst professional, you can get a pretty good distinction. One would be probably pretty negative, the corn, and pretty favorable, the beans, because the U.S. stocks, you know, the bean stocks are at 180, the corn stocks are at 1.9, very tight in beans, very big in corn. So those analysts that look at the U.S. side would say, you know, you've got a pretty weak corn market, pretty strong, pretty firm bean market as a whole. Now, if you looked at world numbers, it would be almost exactly the opposite. If you look at the 2003 low stocks year for the world numbers, oil seeds were up 40% versus 2003. Coarse grains, which would include corn but not wheat, is only up 5%. So that type of analyst would say probably the exact opposite. Well, you're dealing with a very tight corn crop and a very ample bean crop, and plus you've got another South American crop coming on board here in another 4 to 5 months. So it's a key distinction to make at this point. And obviously, we would sit on the side of the world numbers because of what crude has showed us this past year, year and a half, and what, you know, beans have already shown us too. Why did we go higher than $5.70 or $6 in the current bean marketing year? Well, it was a combination of Chinese demand, and it was a combination of a drought in South America and Brazil getting clipped consecutively month after month after month by both the private people and the USDA. So global factors came in with the Brazil supply and the Chinese demand that allowed beans to go higher. So something to keep in your mind. We're obviously in the mindset that the corn is on the very low end of the price scale and that the beans have the ability to sink down, rear their head back up above water, sink down and be a very wide range of trade the next 6 months to a year. But we can get into that more in detail later. Thanks again.
Thank you, Mike. Next to Mike is Bill Mayer with Roach Ag Marketing. And as I mentioned, Bill will soon be on as a cash grain analyst on Thursday afternoons, about 2:25. That's sometime starting in September. And Bill, an opening comment, sir.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks to Moore and Warner for inviting us here this evening. Football season starts Friday around here, and the nights are feeling cooler, and it's thinking about harvest, and I get the idea when I talk to my customers, that's what you'd rather think about, most of you, rather than the marketing. And I just urge you to remember that we can't forget about the marketing as we move into harvest. I've said on Commodity Week a couple of times in a row, and in some of the meetings that I've been doing, that I felt corn prices were going to go lower until we could get work through this old crop corn. And that's really the problem that we've been having, is the big carryout, the huge carryout that we've got in corn, and exaggerated that was the fact that majority of that carryout was in the areas where they have a good crop coming on over in Iowa. And so everybody was forced to move things onto the market. And I think we're getting close to where that we may be low enough on corn. I did some figuring there last Friday on a north central Iowa, close to the Minnesota border. They were paying $1.60 for corn last Friday, would be lower by now. That's about, at that time, that was 85 cents under the July of 06 futures. And the typical basis next spring in that area would be about 25 cents. So if somebody could find some place to put that corn they're buying and hedge it in the July futures and sell it next spring, they had about 60 cents to make on it. That's probably, they're going to find some place to put that stuff. I mean, it's going to start keeping it off the mark of those kind of numbers, I believe. Another point that I think kind of points toward the same thing, a customer I was talking to over there, again last week this was, but I don't think it's changed. He had corn on loan. His payback price was about 9 cents above what the cash price was in his area. He really didn't have any choice but to just forfeit the grain because, you know, we're just the opposite here. If you've watched it, the payback price on the loan, the PCP, is actually 9 or 10 cents less than what the cash price is around here. So a couple of items there that makes me feel like we're getting close enough to stop some of this movement, and that's really what's been pushing it. As we move into this September 1st period with loans coming due and new minimums going on, I think you could continue to see some pressure. But my feeling is December corn down to the 210 level is a awfully good support area, and whether we get there or not, we're close enough now, it's probably not worth arguing over. In the longer run, I feel positive on corn. I feel like we're going to have to buy some acres next spring. There's going to have to be some incentive to plant corn acres with the high inputs that we have. Maybe not here, but in some of the outlying areas. So we can talk some more about that as we move along. On the soybean side of things, you just really have to be pretty realistic, I think. Looking back at 2001-2002, that year we had about 208 million carryout. We had stocks to use of about 7.1%. We had an average farm price of $438. And this year we've got 211 million carryout, according to the current numbers, stocks to use of 7.4, and an average farm price projected of $560. So there's definitely some downside risk in beans. I think that the big item in the beans, once we see that we're not going to be surprised on the yield, any, which we don't know yet. 2 years ago, I gave up on trying to project bean yields because I saw guys go in the field that couldn't tell what they had out there. But once we get past that point, I think the big item is going to be the Brazilian acres. I'm one that's in the boat that feel like the Brazilian acres will actually go down this year. We can talk some reasons why on that, but I think that's probably the positive that's out there in the soybean market right now.
Thank you very much, Bill. Next to Bill is Kirk Himmel with Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Kirk is on AM 580 every Monday morning at 9:50 in the morning and then again at 2:06 in the afternoon. Kurt, an opening statement, please.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here because this is the best part of the job, coming out and be able see you face-to-face and answer each of the questions you have. But as Dave was sort of hitting on, it's awful easy to look back and say, I did this, I did that, and I got it all sold at the high. But that's not the case. This year is a tough year. I mean, you take the best of the best marketing plans, and it was tough to stick to just because of the motions. If you were in a particular area, just kept missing the rain. Even if you got the rain, the heat. I still think the heat played havoc on the crop, and we're going to debate that clear into next January. We thank Pro Farmer for doing their bit this week. Gave us an idea of what to look for, but there's still a lot of diversity out there. Over towards Farmersville, found out that one of the Sea Corn district guys or whatever did a yield check. It was supposed to be 180. They took across the scales 135. Talking to guys checking some corn over by Maridosh along the river there, they're expecting 100, 110. It's coming in 130. 135. So this is going to be a wide variance. If you read the reports, it's anywhere from 5 to 208, and we're going to debate that for some time to come. It's going to be tough to get a bottom line on it. But what I think we're going through is a contra-seasonal move here in the corn. We'll start there. If you look at the 15-year seasonal chart, we usually have an up going to Labor Day, and we flatten off. I think we're moving contra-seasonal, where we can maybe be coming in recording some type of low going to Labor Day. For change, I think we're rooting for lower prices. You know, we usually want higher prices, but I think we're in a position here where everybody wants prices to go lower here so we can get some big LDPs. I think it's the LDP loan game from here on out as a producer. You virtually have downside risk now because of your government programs you can go with. How big an LDP we'll see, but as stated earlier, we've done a good job of liquidating old crop under loan. We were right around 900 billion bushels not too long ago. I think we're down to 300 and some million. Got some more coming due here in September. So I think the market's doing a great job of moving it. Downside risk at this point in time, you know, corn could probably go that 210 in the east, maybe down to $2. But down here, I'd be a buyer. For the end users that we're working with, such as your feeders and so forth, they're scaled down buyers. Been doing, getting a lot of calls. They're trying to buy off their neighbor, outbid the elevator a little bit so they can skip some in charges and out charges and so forth. As mentioned, corn's going to have fair values. Mike mentioned there, you look at the world, corn ending stock's fairly tight, but, you know, our corn exports are kind of dragging. For us to be competitive and get this world any stocks be a factor, we need to see China step forward, and that would be a catalyst to send corn sharply higher, I think. But we can discuss that a little bit on down the road, but I agree corn's got some carry in it. I would look at on out and capture the carry. I think your best bet as far as making some money storing corn and at least hold until the 1st of December. As far as the beans, like they said, it's fairly flat. Beans are going to be non-eventful, but once again, even though we don't have LDP on beans, I still think we want it to go down in the long run. Just the fact that, as Bill hinted on here, we keep beans under $6, they're going to think twice about more expansion in the southern hemisphere. So I believe these lower prices will be beneficial down the road, but as far as being a seller, I think you got to sell the ups in beans and may convert your cash position to paper. There's all kinds of strategies out there. We'd be more than happy to answer any particular questions you have because we all realize you're all a little bit different. Some own ground, some don't. Some's got on-farm storage, off-farm storage. You know, everybody's a little bit different, so we'd be willing to answer any questions you folks have.
Thank you much, Kurt, and we will stay with you and talk a little bit about some short-term things. And then we'll move it on out a little bit further. And the short-term question I have for you, do you believe that first day notice in September, which is coming, corn, is going to tell a tale in some way for December lows?
Well, I don't know about the first notice days. September is relatively not a real heavy traded month. Probably more than anything would be from a technical point of view, the lead contract. We'd be watching the mid-September when September goes off the board. Mm-hmm. And the theory would be that with a carry and charge market, if SEP goes off down here at $1.90, the D's could roll down somewhat. Then once the D's goes off the March, we could get a rolling down effect if the demand does not pick up in a sense. So, yes, from a lead chart perspective, they'll be watching the September to see where it goes off the board.
And I guess I'm asking you, what are your feelings on that September going off the board?
Well, depending what happens over the next 30 days, I feel SEP could go off in this $1.90 area.
The factors that would push it there would be?
Well, we're all looking at the crop we have in the field right now, and there's problems there. There's some pluses, but we got to remember we've got 2 billion bushels of old crop corn carry out yet. And then plus, whether it's a 10.5, a 10, or a 9.5 billion bushel crop we have now, it doesn't matter. All that corn's for sale. Every single bushel's for sale. You know, until we get it harvested, until we get locked away, you know, the end user's just going to say, man, I got this pile out here. You know, once we get it locked away and are loaned or whatever, then we can start bidding it up. Once you guys pay minimum storage on corn or put that corn in a bin, it's there for a while. I can call a guy up and say, hey, I think we need to sell. This corn's going to drop a dollar. No, I just paid minimum storage. I'm not going to. You know, I pay 15 cents. I don't care if it's going out a dollar. I'm hanging on to it. Or else if you just filled the bin up, there's no way I tell you to turn around into that bin. No way. So once we get it locked up, then I think we start the healing process.
Bill, in Illinois, do you believe that come harvest, about 3 weeks, some are already beginning, but when harvest gets heavy, do you believe that in Illinois basis will narrow or widen, and why?
I guess I'd agree somewhat with what Kurt said there. I think that we've kind of been through the gamut here in Illinois since summer began. You know, everybody was trying to find space, building new bunkers, building new bins there in the early summer. Then the drought hit, and everybody stopped selling, you know, and I'm saying the elevators, stopped selling, and, boy, let's fill this stuff up that we made space for. And we're in the process of doing that now. And I guess I believe, and you've got to assume that the crop isn't going to be a lot bigger than we think it is. I mean, if the Illinois USDA numbers are not too low, I guess I think that once that grain gets put away, as Kurt was saying, I think you could see the bases come in and start to narrow as you get into harvest, and the spreads maybe narrow up some. One of the things with that is in this part of the country, in central Illinois, you guys go pretty fast. So you're usually the leaders as far as harvest go. So you may not get to that point as the corn around here is being harvested. I feel like there's going to be a lot of corn harvested prior to the bean harvest. The elevator where I have my office today, a guy brought a sample in, low ground 28.5%, high ground 34%. The way there's some difference in the way the kernels look too, but you know, I was a little bit surprised that we were that dried down to that point. So I guess I think that as you move into the harvest and assuming that the yields aren't a lot better than everybody thinks, we could see a narrowing of the bases and some opportunities. That's why sometimes when you guys ask, are you going to store corn or sell it, it's kind of hard to make that decision at this point because things could change before we get to that point.
Mike, I'm pretty sure that parts of Illinois are going to see an LDP. You know, where they're harvesting already, and there's some of that been going on. But make the case of why this LDP is going to still be there in 3 weeks.
Make the case why it would be?
Why it would be.
Fundamentally, from a supply and demand standpoint in this area, I can't make a good case for that, Dave. I can make a case from a shipping and freight standpoint. Well, today, for instance, barge freights on the Mississippi in some locations jumped 20%. On the Illinois River, barge freight rates went up 10%. What essentially happens is the elevator gets knocked that, and the elevator goes ahead and pushes most of that back into the farmer price. So if the farmer price goes down and gets depressed from that. So you put that together with what's going on in the Western Corn Belt. We've been talking about this since we were in Tuscola together a few weeks back. The Western Corn Belt basis is so bad, not just because of the old crop corn, but also because of the logistics of not being able to find a way to get it south because of the rivers, because of the drought. A whole nother, you know, issue has been opened up now due to this drought that the river levels won't let us get the grain down. It's not a factor of demand because the export sales have been very, very good these past few weeks in corn. So our greatest negative factor, we would say, in the markets would be that the rivers stay low while we're shelling, and we can't get the price we absolutely deserve, and the value level is not pushed into the cash price because of the synthetic freight issue that's going on. There's too many barges that can't run, and not enough freight cars to haul it, and not enough rails in the Western Corn Belt to haul the corn.
Want to stay with you and talk about a little bit about this idea of traders looking at the local pipeline, looking at U.S. carry out, not really focusing that much yet on world carry out, world coarse grain numbers. You mentioned the export sales, pretty good recently. Today, we saw export sales in corn, old and new crop combined, 65.7 million bushels. That's the third week in a row that the number's been pretty doggone good, and yet, you know, traders, I kind of talk to go, so what at this point? So at what point do they turn their attention to the exports and to this world coarse grain issue?
I think it goes back to what Bill and Kurt have been talking about. I mean, what we pick up from Chicago is, okay, we admit the demand's getting better. We give you that. The demand's getting better. You're right. The dollar's gone lower. The U.S. is carrying most of the world's supply of corn right now. It's starting to show up in the exports, but we've got a new crop coming. We've got, you know, we're going to start shelling here, and a lot of people out in our area in Indiana are saying this corn's looking, you know, pretty close to getting ready to be shelled here. It looks earlier than normal right now. Moisture levels are still too high, but the drying down and the dropping of the ears is really taking place maybe 2-3 weeks in advance of what we would expect because we've been clipped by some of the dry weather as well. So I guess the best answer I can give you, Dave, is the traders, until we get into the corn harvest and they can't use that as a crutch anymore, they're going to trade corn off of either beans or wheat. And so they're going to say, give me whatever's negative. And I'll give you for this is an Oliver Stone type mindset, conspiracy theory type mindset that I carry around, and Eric, that works in our office in the back, carries around with us. We got a 6 to 10 day and an 8 to 14 day weather forecast that was above normal temps and below normal precip. We saw newswire stories that said, oh, it doesn't matter. Bean pods are 94%. You know, we're pod in the United States, 94%. It's not going to help the beans. It doesn't matter if it's dry now. Well, then all of a sudden radars show up, you know, today on how it's raining cats and dogs in Illinois and out in the dry areas of Missouri, and all of a sudden the beans want to fall back. Well, it's because the pod fill and the beans. It's helping the beans, you silly man. So it seems like to us that they're – in the medium-term scope and what we deal with, we don't deal with the day-to-day stuff. We ignore it for the most part. But in the medium-term scope, we just wash these kind of days away and say, why didn't beans go up? Because of the short-term factors. Okay, does this change our plan? No, it doesn't. And that's where we end the day.
Bill, I want to add another factor in this week. I believe that the funds are now short corn.
Right.
They
futures.
Went short corn this week.
Futures only.
Futures only.
Right.
Right. And you know, I'm wondering what the potential implications of that might be.
It's a good question. I guess the real question is how short are they willing to get? And I guess I would question at these levels, these price levels that we're at currently, that they're willing to get to record-type short levels. I mean, I think, as we talked about earlier, I think their downside risk at least 10 cents and maybe a little bit more. That, you know, the funds, if they do it in a systematic manner, could add another 30 or 40,000 contracts to their short position and not push the price down below that 210 support. That's probably the mode that they're in. And they're probably not going to get out of that mode until they see something that shows that we've reversed the market, and that probably would take a December futures price over 230 at this point, I guess would be my feeling. One thing that I think that's kind of an unknown factor out there is that if you read enough and look at enough and listen to enough of the analysts, I mean, everybody's kind of talking about this buying the acres, and yeah, if we get down to the first of the year, we're probably going to see some movement in the corn price. I mean, that's kind of a common theme, wouldn't you agree, out there? Mm-hmm. Some people may not wait. You know, if they see some kind of a reversal type move or bottoming type move, you may see some pretty active, funds reversing positions, I believe. Speculators getting into the market because they don't want to be the last ones to get in. So if you remember two years ago, when we had the bean situation, if you remember, the market was very hard to convince that we had the bean crop that we had. You know, you guys knew it well before the Chicago trade really reacted to it. Part of that reason was because we had prices up there. We kind of made a move up, and we're up over the $6 area in the $6 to $6.50, I believe. So, you know, we're already at a relatively higher price. Right now we're going in this corn harvest at, you know, pretty low levels. So I think there could be, you know, that could be the surprise if there is one out there, that the yields start to come in lower and the funds for some reason decide to reverse.
Kurt, look at this wheat market for a sec. And there's record open interest Chicago wheat. And the shorts are, I don't know, 45, 55,000 contracts, somewhere in that ballpark. The action in the last few days has been pretty positive in the wheat market relative to what's been going on in the soy and the corn. Do you think there's potential that this wheat market is prepared, is ready to begin to maybe lead the corn market higher?
Well, you could work the wheat-corn spread here for a while. The great battlegrounds in the wheat pit's been between the funds and the commercial. The funds, just to hit on a little bit here to add, is the funds, if you're going to invest in a commodity fund, it's going to cost you $50,000 to $100,000 in most cases. And if you put $50,000 in a fund, you expect results. These are very sophisticated, educated traders. They've got a plan, and they stick to that plan. You go up to a fund trader and say, it's dry in the Midwest. They go, nah. Don't want to hear that. They stick to their plan. And when the green line crosses above the red line, it's a buy. And when the red line goes back below the green line, it's a sell. And they'll push it until it turns the other way. And that's what's going on in the wheat pit here is they got sell signals. They're pushing the market down. On the other side of the equation, we've seen some fairly aggressive wheat sales. We saw Iraq step up. We've seen Egypt step up to be a buyer. There's questions about the EU crop. They've had weather problems there. There's questions about the spring wheat crop here. We've got problems there. Then plus two wheat harvests wrapped up. So I believe, yeah, we can see wheat gain on corn here over the short term. But once wheat corn harvest is done, I think corn can turn around and be the leader here as we get in past harvest.
All right, let's turn our attention for a little while to the soybeans, and then we'll get to your questions. All right, panelists, is the bean crop going to be larger final number than it is now, Argus report? Yes, no?
Well, it depends if we get a frost or not. But I think the bean crop is stable, if not has added a bushel or a half. August makes beans, and we've had most areas from fairly decent rains. The pod count's there. It's a matter of whether the pods fill out or not. We'll see that. But I'd say we're stable, if not a little better. The problem with the bean market right now is not the crop's getting bigger, but the demand's not there. I mean, old crop bean demand's good. When you look at new crop bean business we have on the book, it's almost record low compared to past history. I think the reason the bean market's gone down the last few days is we've heard rumors of China buying 5 to 10 cargoes of U.S. beans. There's been no confirmation of that. I believe they've been buying, but they've been buying small lots flying underneath the radar. So in order for this bean market to giddy up and go, as Dave says, we've got to have some Chinese bean confirmation of some buying, because our main competitor is still the Southern Hemisphere, and I think that bean business is spread out. I think it's to come. But China's just waiting around and hiding under the trees here.
Bill, above or below August on final?
I do not know. I mean, I just don't think there's any way to know out there. The pod counts are there. But if I were to make my best guess, I would say it's going to be at or below. And basing that on just maybe some logic that we've only raised better yields than what they said in August twice, and I just don't think that we've had the kind of year that we could expect to be in one of the top 3 years in bean production.
Mike, above or below?
Same as Bill. Okay. We'd say below. If you haven't had rains in 2 weeks and it heats up again, you're taking top end yield off. That we'll have more BBs and a lot of blanks. I think that's really where it goes back to the corn and beans, where a lot of people have, I think, astutely and correctly said, you know, the crop is going to be made or broken in Iowa and these good areas. I think it's the same with the beans. If you've got a good stand but you haven't gotten rain the last 2 weeks and it heats up again and we go in the last half of the month without rain, we've got a lot of sudden death in our area. The bean plants are starting to shut down. And I'm not trying to look out my own window. I'm hearing this all around the eastern Midwest, but this is where the beans are supposed to come from, since Illinois and since some of these other areas have had a tough time. So, I mean, you've gotten crop-saving rains, but does that mean you have, you know, top-end yields? No, it doesn't, not in our view. And I think our mindset is the next 35 days, 40 days, especially after the September numbers come out, our mindset was that the beans would fall into the September report on Chicago, thinking the yield was going to be higher on the September report. And so far that's worked out. We will lift hedges around the 570 NOVE area. If you've got HTAs that you don't have to, you know, spend a lot of money on to lift out of, because we made some 570 sales way back when, we'd like to get those off the books and store a little bit more. We're sellers at 675. We're buying hedges back at 575. We're selling at 675. If we start to go above 675, we're going to move hard on 06 sales in the form of May and July puts, because we're just in the same camp as Bill. The energy input costs in corn, and we're already starting to see it in South America. Argentina's talking about 25% more sunflower seed acreage this year. They're going after the oil seeds because it's the cheapest crop to grow, and it's the hardiest. And we're hearing that in Kansas and out west, and we think we'll be the same way here in the Midwest. That you'll have guys stay with beans this year if these input prices are as high as they are in Ohio and Indiana. So we want to take 675 and hedge it for the rest of our 05 crop and then start some 06 crop as well.
Bill, make your best case of why you believe that Brazil is going to plant fewer soybean acres. I mean, we've had both Chris Hurt from Purdue University and Daryl Good at the University of Illinois say, you know, until these beans get down to where it costs to plant them, $4, you know, in that area, there's always incentive to put something in the ground. All things being equal, why would it not be beans?
Well, I think from what I read and talking to people that are down there, sugar is a good alternative. One thing I just read a couple days ago is looking at the possibility of having 5% increase in their sugar acres, or 5% of the bean acres switched over to sugar. If you're not aware, Brazil, this is what a goal maybe we need to have here in the United States, 65% of their vehicles in Brazil are flex vehicles and have the ability to burn up to 100% alcohol. And they use mostly sugar alcohol down there because, as Dave mentioned, the corn isn't necessarily the most economic crop to grow.
So they either drink it or burn it.
They got no choice there. And I guess I think that's one reason. I think the other thing is that the currency, the cost of their inputs, they've had this situation with the rust, the cost of the bean acres are higher than some of the other crops like sugar. And from what I've seen, you take those guys down in Mato Grosso, you know, with the yields they had, I think that state averaged 13 bushels an acre last year. I think if you're an established producer, from what I understand talking to people, you can go out and you get financing, you can plant. But to go out and expand acres, I think it's going to be pretty difficult.
Yeah, let's ask producers here, due to higher energy costs, you guys in the room here, how many will go more bean acres next year due to higher energy costs?
That would be nobody, in case you weren't counting.
Something I might just point out, not to interrupt here, but I would suggest, and I know it depends on your farm and your soil types and many things, but we just had that July 06 wheat up there about 370. It's back down to about 350 now, 352. I guess we close that tonight. But, you know, that would give you 330 or 330 cash wheat for next year. That looks to be like that could be a fairly good alternative. You guys probably know the numbers better than I do, but it would be something I'd urge producers to look at, to consider, as a way of saving some input costs, maybe.